Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another Starborn Support Radio presentation with your hosts, Michael Austin Melton, Julia Weiss, Laura Weiser, Audrey Starborn Hewins, and Chris Augustine. And now Starborn Support Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Good evening to everybody out there on this Sunday evening, raining here in Philadelphia, wherever you are. I hope you have at least a little sunshine or at least a clear night tonight. We're floating out here. But anyway, we have coming on to the radio tonight by popular demand. We knew we wanted to have this gentleman back before we even had him on the first time. We have Mark Passio here with us tonight, and he is going to talk a little bit more about the dark side of alien abduction and ufology in general. It's good to get a very complete and rounded knowledge base of information, even, you know, if you're an abductee or whether you're not an abductee. It's good to know the whole ball of wax, and that's what we aim to do here. Before we get started, however, I want to turn it over to Julia, because one of our past guests and good friend, Miriam Delicato, has a program starting up, and I want her to talk a few minutes about it. Julia.
Hi, everybody. I'm so excited to be able to talk about this program because it's near and dear to my heart. The last time Mark Passio was on, I asked him a question with all the things he was presenting about being aware of all the, you know, the Mother Earth being polluted, the financial and government and all that stuff that's not seemed to working well for the average person. I asked him, I said, well, what do we do? What can we do about it? And the first thing is to become aware, and then you find more people that are aware. So Miriam is one of those great people that actually have an organization that she's involved with, and I'm so excited about it. And they're looking for volunteers. So if you have issues with everything that's going on and you want to save our planet and be a part of this incredible process of changing things for the better, you can do it. You need to go onto the website, which is thegreatgathering.org. So that's thegreatgathering.org, and they're looking for volunteers. So if you have a specialty, your whatever it is, finance, you're a doctor, you're account, you know, you're a video person, whatever it is, they want to know what it is. And they don't have any events yet, but Miriam will be letting us know of anything that comes up, and we're happy to announce it on the show. And the Great Gathering, what they're trying to do, I believe, is to get places around the Earth. I think right now it's probably going to be Hopi Land, the Four Corners. Mm-hmm. They're probably going to have the first event where a lot of people can get together. And I'm not sure all it entails, but I think it's something to do with prayer, meditation, and the Hopi rites. And so it's wonderful. So everybody get on that website and take a look at it. Read Miriam's book, The Blue Prophecy, and you'll really understand everything. So I wanted to put that out there for you guys. Go ahead, Mark.
Hey, thank you. Let's bring Mark in. There we go. Hey, Mark.
Hi, everyone. Great to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you back because there's so much yet that we need to talk about and know about the negative and dark side of ufology and alien abduction. You know, I've done some reading and some research, and there's so much out there that, you know, I don't think many people are aware of. I mean, in the past, John Lear has talked about aliens kidnapping humans and not returning them. And Nick Redfern, once again, in his book Final Events, Secret Government Group on UFOs and the Afterlife, you know, a government think tank thinks, I don't know whether this is real or not, but according to Nick Redfern, there is a government think tank that thinks that the aliens are demons. The Earth is a farm, and we are the cattle. And, you know, I guess you can take it from there. And also, there is a great, great on YouTube, I think you can watch it, a great presentation by Butch Witkowski, one of our new guys that we are affiliated with, on alien abduction and human mutilation. So there's been, you know, there's a lot of negative stuff out there, and I know that, you know, there's a lot of stuff that you can see, but there's also a lot of stuff that you can't see, a lot of manipulation. So wherever you need to start, Mark, we're ready to go.
Yeah, I'd like to start with that first assumption that Earth is actually a farm.
Okay.
And we are the livestock of the farm. While I would agree with that conclusion, as dark of a worldview as that sounds like it is, there's a whole lot of different places that your mindset can go from there. In other words, do you accept that that's the eternal condition? You accept that that's just how it always has been, how it is now, and how it must always be? Do you think that there's legitimacy to that notion, that we should be a species that is simply preyed off by another species? Or do you think there is something that can be done about that condition? Do you think that we are somehow complicit in that condition? Because without any question in my mind, human beings are actively complicit in the continuation of that condition. Most of all, probably the people who are actively in control of humanity, and I mean the actual other human beings that are in positions of power and influence,
right,
meaning in control of humanity. They're playing ball with their own captors, with their own abductors, with their own enslavers. So, you know, it's the condition of a small group of house slaves that is controlling the rest of the slaves on the plantation. In a plantation scenario in Civil War time period America, the owners of the plantations could not possibly control the African-American slave population that was brought over here against their will from Western Africa, from the Ivory Coast. Could not have been done. Not enough actual physical manpower to do it. They had to hire not only people to control the slave population through physical force and guns, okay, which were hands that they hired for the plantation, but they also, that still didn't provide them with enough manpower and enough numbers in pure physical strength. They had to get slaves themselves onto the side of the master by promising them gifts and little quirks that they would get if they played ball with
mm-hmm.
the owners of the plantation. And these were known as house slaves, or slaves that kept other slaves in line, as opposed
mm-hmm.
to what
mm-hmm.
was just referred to as field slaves, you know, the
right.
general slave population. And they were often the most brutal. They were often as, if not more brutal, than the hired hands that were hired and paid to keep the slave population in line on the plantation. This is really the scenario that we're witnessing when it comes to governments of the world playing into this entire agenda and scenario that is absolutely, in my view, directed by non-human intelligence. Now, again, this is something that I'm only really beginning to publicly speak on in a full way. And again, I thank you for the opportunity of providing, you know, your forum here that you could bring me on and give people a little bit of a preview for what I'm going to be talking about extensively on my show in coming months.
Mm-hmm.
Because my radio show and podcast called What on Earth is Happening at whatonearthishappening.com. I've basically explained the control system and the methodologies that are used to perpetuate the control system over the last several years. And it's only now that I feel that the way has been prepared, so to speak, where enough information has been provided in a linear progression and in a very logical progression to help people to understand that, in fact, yes, this is a condition of slavery. Yes, this is a condition of being held under duress against our will, an abductee scenario, a kidnapping scenario, a hostage situation, if you will, here on Earth, and that it is not controlled by just human beings. It is something other than a human intelligence that is ultimately feeding off of human energy that is being held captive here. And again, many people will instantly jump to the conclusion and say, well, that's a horribly dark worldview, and it's a disempowering worldview. So I get this a lot. People will say, anybody who talks about this being a possibility of what is actually happening on the Earth is a disinfo agent against humanity and working for the dark side, because by talking about the possibility that Earth is an actual farm system, a literal farm system, and that humanity has been kept against their will as livestock in a state of slavery and actively being farmed, that somehow that is a totally and utterly disempowering position to tell the truth about, to take and to tell the truth about. And I highly disagree with that conclusion.
I do.
Telling the truth, and no matter how dark that truth may be, is always empowering. It's always putting us in a position to better understand the patterns that are taking place both within us and around us in our environment. And knowledge, when it is actively applied, gets converted to power in the real world. Okay? So ignorance is the only thing that's ever negative and disempowering, not knowing. And the greatest form of ignorance, and let me just be really clear about this to set the tone for this whole interview tonight, the greatest form of disempowering ignorance, the greatest mechanism of any controller to be used against the people that they seek to control, listen very carefully, is to cut those people that they want to control off from the knowledge of their true origins. Because without that knowledge, you have no reference point for where you came from and the scenario, the conditions that got you to where you are now. And if you don't understand those reference points and that framework for what led to the current condition, you are highly disempowered to get to the root causal factors, make an accurate diagnosis, and then take the proper action to reverse that condition and bring in what you really want to see manifesting in your life. That is how disempowerment really works. It's by cutting people off from the knowledge of their true origins, not by sharing that knowledge in an empowering way and letting right. people know, yes, there is something that can be done about it. Absolutely, no matter how dark it seems. It doesn't make a difference what the nature of these beings are. The scenario, the solution, is still the same. It is to step into your own personal power, understand your absolute ownership of your own self and your own free will decisions to behave in particular ways, and to step into the power to make those decisions for yourself and to use the all-powerful magic word, which is the word of all power and strength in the universe, which is no. When somebody right. is trying to take your personal power, you need to step into the truth and say no to them. When we do that collectively as a species against whatever force is seeking to enslave us, nothing can stop us, and nothing can prevent us from claiming our freedom and embodying it and living it once we are willing to do that in a big way.
That sounds the concept of fear from being detached from the knowledge. One can only develop a sense of fear, which
exactly.
I think is another tool.
I mean, as a matter of fact, that ignorance that I'm talking about that
Mark?
Prevents people from even wanting to – yes, can you hear me?
We missed that first
Did
part.
I lose you?
Yeah, just
okay.
for a second.
I said the ignorance that people are undergoing, that they don't want to know what really happened here in the ancient past, or they're very loath to look at the uncomfortable scenario about what may have occurred here in the ancient past, is it's driven by fear. They're fearful because it's a big unknown. Not only is it a big unknown, but if we really look at it, we're up against a very difficult to overcome situation if the truth is told. Okay? Nobody is saying this is going to be just a walk in the park or a piece of cake. You know, there's going to be very specific requirements to reversing the current human condition. Like I talk about in some of my other work, there are requirements for obtaining what we say we want if that condition is not currently present. You know, human beings will say that they want certain conditions to be present for themselves and for their species as a whole in the aggregate. Okay? They'll say, yeah, we want happiness, we want peace, we want freedom, we want health, we want prosperity, etc. and so forth. But there are specific requirements that exist to obtain those conditions. Again, especially if those conditions are not currently present. If they're not currently present, that means that a specific polarity is operating in place to prevent those conditions from manifesting. And there are requirements for reversing those polarities. If the conditions for meeting the requirements, okay, to creating that change, if those conditions, the requirements for obtaining those conditions, I should say, aren't met, the conditions don't just reverse themselves automatically by magic. We have to understand that this is counteracting. What I'm saying here is completely counteracting a lot of New Age notions about how change gets created in our lives, and it's really stripping away the rose-colored glasses, if you will, about what a lot of people have been lied to deliberately and deliberately deceived about how we are creating the conditions in which we live and operate and perpetuating those conditions. You know, and people think that, oh, requirement somehow doesn't exist to creating real and lasting change. Well, I'm trying to explain to people it 100% absolutely does, and those requirements are very specific. And what the main requirement is, ladies and gentlemen, is deep knowledge. Again, this is another huge thing that is so downplayed, especially in the New Age community, or what I am now calling the New Cage community. The New Cage community wants to take the emphasis off the role of knowledge, you know? That knowledge, they're trying to tell people knowledge isn't, you know, specifically required. It's not as important as just feeling or care or emotion. I'm telling you, all those things are important. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying take the emphasis off of those things either. But they need to be combined with a deep knowledge of what has gone on here in the past and is going on here in the present moment with our species, which you know, that's the demystified definition for truth, what's taking place in the – what has taken place in the past and what is taking place in the present. I think there's no better definition for truth, you know, than that. It's a very, again, demystifying concept of what truth means. And, you know, if these – again, if that knowledge is absent, right, if the knowledge to obtaining the conditions for creating change is absent, or not even absent, if it's just being ignored – if we are being dissuaded from looking at it because, oh, that's uncomfortable, or, oh, no, it can't possibly be that. You shouldn't look into those areas because, oh, that's all somehow been debunked, or it couldn't possibly be that, you know, because that's so uncomfortable we can't even entertain the notion that beings of a higher intelligence could have come here in the ancient past and genetically manipulated us. Hmm. You know, as long as that knowledge continues to remain unknown or ignored, the manifestation of the desired conditions that we say we want is going to remain impossible. Ignorance is not bliss, ladies and gentlemen. Ignorance is slavery, death, and chaos. And that's why book knowledge, knowledge of what has gone on in the ancient past that has been attempted to be meticulously preserved by our ancient brothers and sisters, writing down these histories, attempting to preserve them and be archivists and protectors of that knowledge and information and pass that information down through different societies and traditions throughout history. It is an amazing labor of love that they have done for us in the modern day. And if we take that knowledge seriously and we look at it with an objective, open mind and an open heart, that knowledge can empower us to reverse the conditions that we're currently experiencing.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like a mouthful, but actually when you put it down, you know, into some more simpler terms, you know, keep your eyes open, your ears open, and your mind open, and learn. Be aware.
Yeah. Read above all else. You know, the emphasis off of books, especially in the New Cage movement, it's a very disturbing trend. You know, I'm not trying to tell you, oh, you know, meditating, going within, attempting to, you know, get in touch with inner knowledge, you know, of how your emotional makeup works and the shadow side of yourself works. That's all extraordinarily important. But do not say that that's the only form of knowledge out there is internal knowledge. You know, there is external knowledge to be understood about what happened here in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that I'm going to start getting into in a big way on my own personal show. And again, there's so many ancient traditions that have discussed this and talked about it. You know, these ancient texts, people want to believe they're all just myths. They're all just legends. They're all just, colorful, imaginative stories. I mean, you can't even imagine how difficult it was to even write things down in the ancient past.
Oh, right.
You know,
right,
they were using papyrus scrolls and you know, quills and, you know, ancient forms of ink and pressing, you know, pressing hard objects and cylinder seals into clay and then baking them. I mean, it's just the effort alone to try to preserve these written histories. It boggles the imagination to me that anybody could possibly just think this was for some form of entertainment and storytelling. They were obviously trying to communicate very important knowledge and meticulously attempting to preserve it in times that it was so dangerous to even attempt to do that it was punishable by death. Because the control system, the control class of that day, you know, that was out in the open, operating out in the open, not like it is today, since humanity has gained a certain modicum of consciousness, and, you know, they have to do it through covert methods, through covert methodologies of mind control today. They were doing it in very overt ways that were just brutally violent back then. You know, not that brutal violence doesn't exist in the modern world, but I'm just saying the open nature of the control system was much more violent and in your face back then. And these beings knew that they were being kept under open slavery, and yet they wrote these things down anyway against all the dictates and the commands of their overlords. And, doing this was punishable by death, and yet they did it anyway.
Yeah.
So,
right,
you know,
right.
We have it easy when it comes to preserving and sharing knowledge in the modern world. If our ancient ancestors looked at how easy we have it to preserve and spread knowledge and how knowledge is at our fingertips and they recognize we're still enslaving ourselves through our ignorance, they would just put their head in their hands and weep and weep and weep for months.
Yeah.
You know, compared to what they had it, we have it easy, actually. You know, the control system is such that now it has to go into covert mode and work through mind control. And we have open access to information at our fingertips. We can learn this. Now we're not in a state of nescience. We're in a state of ignorance. We're openly refusing the truth. And that's one of the worst positions to possibly be in. I mean, you know, nature abhors that condition. I tell people, you have to respect that which is. Okay, you have to respect the truth. You have to respect existence or expect resistance from nature. Expect resistance from the universe itself if you go into willful ignorance. You can willfully ignore reality, but not without negative consequence. Not without negative consequence.
Yeah, yeah. It's almost like karma, you know. Building up a reserve of truth is a lot better when people face you with falsehoods. But the other thing that is most interesting, that if you read through the Hindu texts and the Quran and the Bible and other ancient texts, you find a pattern through them that match. I mean, there are similarities to each of the stories, and yes. I think that's really important. People have to really pay attention to the similarities that are found within all of these texts, and I think that's one of the keys to really learning.
Yes. It's the same story. I mean,
it really is.
Same story.
It really
is. It's just told from different cultural perspectives. That's all it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, this is Laura, Mark. How you doing?
Hey, how are you?
My question was, I was just wondering what your opinion was or what your thoughts were regarding the Sumerian texts and Zachariah Sitchin's translation of them.
Yeah, I think Sitchin's done a pretty decent job. I think, sometimes he'll venture into the realm of conjecture or attempting to complete things that are fragmentary. And I don't really have that much of a problem with his method of doing that, because it is put into a framework of that which we really do have access to in a open way and in ways that are, non-fragmentary. So there is some conjecture in his work, and I understand the reason for that and the reason for his speculation. And don't get me wrong, I'm not telling you that a 100% totally accurate picture of what happened here is there in crystal clear terminology, because it's not. These are fragmentary accounts, and you have to take these Sumerian texts and cuneiform tablets and cylinder seals, etc., along with other epics of creation like the Enuma Elish from that cultural region of the world, the Epic of Gilgamesh and other texts. You have to take those in context with other texts. So my recommendation for people would be, while Sitchin could be a good framework to start with, you don't want to just take his word for it at face value and say, oh, that's all I need to know. You want to compare that with other cultural, regional stories and texts that deal with the same source material, the same events. So you have to look at it all put together in an eclectic way. That's my best recommendation for people. You can't just look at it from one unidimensional perspective. So while I have respect for the work that Sitchin has done, and I come to similar conclusions as him, not certainly with everything, but I think just going to one person's work and saying this is the be-all and end-all of what you need to know about this is a very unidimensional way of looking at things. So my take is always, and my approach is always, to do this from an eclectic variety of sources. You have to assemble vast amounts of data. That's called assembling your grammar. It's the first step of the truth method discovery methodology known as the trivium method, which is really where the scientific methodology grows from. And when we assemble those pieces of information from a very eclectic variety of sources, as we've talked about already, a clearer picture comes into view, because it's like you have to look at the ancient past as a huge jigsaw puzzle where we don't have all the pieces. None of us have all the pieces, no matter who's claiming that. It's not true. I don't have all the pieces to this puzzle, nor does any other one individual. But if we all bring those pieces of that fragmentary picture to the table, we have a large picture that we have a good portion of those pieces, maybe 70%, maybe 75%. And if we put all of those pieces in place that we do have, the picture starts to emerge. And we can see what that picture looks like and what it's going to form if we put the other. Then we can speculate it regard to what the other pieces of that puzzle look like. Okay, so that's my approach to all knowledge, not only knowledge when it comes to what happened in our ancient past that deals with non-human intelligence, but everything has to be put together with that kind of an approach. It's a holistic approach to knowledge. It's not saying I'm going to study this from a myopic, unidimensional perspective, and I'm going to become a specialist in this one area. And I think that's where a lot of people get lost, and they try to say, well, you know, I'm only going to focus on this, and then I'm going to find one thing I disagree with in this person's research, and then I'm going to call them a disinfo agent. You know, it's really to me, that's a childish approach when it comes to the uncovery of any kind of knowledge. The eclectic gathering of information is the pathway to really deep understanding. You could go to that old adage, I don't recall off the top of my head. It's the poem regarding the Pierian spring. I think it's an old Greek poem. A little learning is a dangerous thing. Drink deeply or taste not the Pierian spring.
Mm-hmm.
There, shallow draughts intoxicate the brain, and only drinking deeply will sober us again. Okay? Beautiful words of wisdom. Meaning you have to go deep into knowledge. You can't skirt the periphery and just take one sip from that spring, because then you're going to be drunk. Your senses are going to be inebriated. You know, you have to drink deeply if you want to sober yourself with deep knowledge. It's great words of wisdom to live by, and I think too few people take it to heart. So that's my take on really – any individual researcher's work, whether it comes to Sitchin or von Däniken or Lloyd Pye or Michael Cremo or any of the other people who have done work in this regard, Michael Tellinger, et cetera, you have to take it all in perspective and gather your grammar. When you gather your grammar, you put it all together, then you could go to work in processing it and weeding out logical inconsistencies and coming to a conclusion regarding it.
Mark, it's Julia. Last time you were on, you talked about, I forget this guy's name, but he had like an 8-hour thing. I think his name was not Michael Tellinger. It was like a Greek name or a different name. But anyway, I listened to him, and I listened to a few other people you talked about, and I read a lot of Sitchin's books. And I kind of came, you know, and I've read the Bible. I've read a lot of the Hindu and everything. And I came to the conclusion there does seem like there's a family of extraterrestrials, or either one family from one race or maybe different races that are fighting for us. One wants to enslave us, and one loves us, and wants us to, you know, it gives us knowledge. So I wanted to find out if that was also something that you gathered from all these materials.
Yeah, I do think that there are different races of beings in the stars that respect spiritual existence and respect freedom and knowledge and truth, and they are out there, and they do form what you might call an intergalactic community of beings.
Right.
I do not think that they are going to do this work for us, however. I liken this on the last show that we did to, you know, would you go onto an island off the coast of another continent and try to rescue beings from being eaten by predators on that island? We generally are going to look first to our own spiritual uplift and development, and we're not going to look at another line of another species of beings as our own responsibility to pull up by the bootstraps, so to speak. They're going to look at that as we need to do that work for ourselves, because it's our responsibility to do that, not theirs.
Right.
And, I think that's
the danger in getting into this trap of thinking that these beings are here to somehow rescue us. They're not going to be interested in doing that work. I kind of almost take a pot shot at that worldview. That the Sirians, the Arcturians, the Andromedans, et cetera, and so forth, the Pleiadians, the Galactic Federation of Light, that they're all here to rescue us, and they're somehow going to be saviors. I don't look at it that way whatsoever at all. I think it's a naive viewpoint. While I'm not saying that intelligent species that have a spiritual basis and a basis in truth and understanding of natural law, you know, I'm not saying they don't exist in the universe.
Right,
I'm saying
right.
They're not tripping over themselves to come here and rescue us from our own ignorance. They respect that that is our work to do for ourselves. And I think if they did try to do something like that, what they would be doing, in effect, is actually stunting our spiritual development. It would be the equivalent of someone trying to build up their muscles by slowly building up with weights and using a medicine ball and doing some crunches, etc. And then you come in and just do all their lifting for them and say, "Oh no, you don't have to worry about it. Let your muscles go back to atrophying." Well,
yeah.
We can't let our spiritual center and our spiritual muscle atrophy. We have to work it and use it and do that work
right.
for ourselves.
Yeah.
That's what the great work is. And I think too many people are saying that's too difficult to do. That involves too much personal change. That involves taking on too much personal responsibility for ourselves. And I'm going to externalize my power and somehow wait for a savior that's never going to arrive. It's, to me, again,
right.
and people might take offense to this, but I'm going to say it anyway, it's childish naivete to take that position and just wait on other beings to come in here and rescue us from our own ignorance. I think anybody taking that approach is going to be waiting forever, and they're going to be in a hell. They're going to be in a hell world while they wait for that to happen.
It's interesting because in some of my meditations, I practice Buddhism, and I've chanted about changing the world situation. The first message I got was, "You have to change yourself." And I know they're
yes.
not going to. I mean, they may intervene if there's like a nuclear war going to happen, but they want to. We're like children that you have to let your children, or like a bird, you have to let your babies fly. You can't help them all the time. They have to fly. I understand that. And I got a lot of personal messages of things I personally need to work on in order to make my world, the people around me, happy. And then it trickles out. And the other thing I wanted to mention, did you ever hear of a guy named Drake? Have you ever heard that?
Oh, yes, I have. I personally find that particular data set disinformation. And it's just
so?
my take on it, my opinion, because, again, it's taking this approach that actual real-world action on our part isn't really deeply required. Deep knowledge isn't really required.
No,
it's
no, I think maybe it's a different guy. This isn't
the person who talks about that, races of beings are going to come down here and there's going to be some kind of a ascension to another, less dense form of existence. I'm thinking of someone else.
Yeah, this is a pseudonym. It's not his real name. I think he was in the Army.
Okay.
And it was interesting because I listened to him a couple days ago, and I thought it would be interesting to mention
different.
It.
Different
guy.
Tell me about him, because it's definitely a different person that we're referring to.
Well, it's very interesting because we're talking about doing things on our own. First, we have to become aware, and then we have to take some sort of action with that knowledge. This guy, he was in the Army for a number of years. He retired. And something, he got involved with this guy. He learned how to deal with the government, like to write letters to get things done, the kind of legal process that's going on. So he found out that each individual state is like a sovereign state that doesn't have to be affected by the federal government. And we have all these issues with the Federal Reserve and, the financial, the way things are, the World Bank. And there was something about something you can file. You can actually file for your own house to be a sovereign government within itself. It's like weird. It can happen. He learned how to do this. And I'm not sure exactly what his reasons were. There was something about taxes or something. And the Army got in touch with him. And there's people in the Army that understand our government is definitely, it's called a de facto government, totally corporate.
Yes.
It's not common. That's what made me think of you. It's not common law.
That part is true. We have a de facto government,
right,
and it is not based in common law or natural law.
And he kind of had a way. I have to find where I found it. He found a way to make sovereign the state of he's in Pennsylvania, the state of Pennsylvania. And I think different states were talking about, it's not about seceding, it's just making your state sovereign, so it's not affected by by the federal government. So the Army was very interested in what he had to say, because in the 1980s, they felt the government was changing more to that de facto, and they felt that it was their duty to fight with the civilian population against a de facto government, against a government like we have now. So that's not by the
people
before
like
the
that,
people.
That don't generally stay in positions of power very long now in today's world. You know,
that
may have been going on
fake
then.
Name. Yeah,
right.
He uses a fake name, but what had happened is, I think he said with some of these guys, with the filing of all these reports, they actually have federal agents. The Army, I don't know how it works, but they get these federal agents, the same kind of guys that are on the planes. They get them to arrest certain people, and supposedly there's going to be a massive arrest of a lot of crummy politicians and a lot of banking people, which had something to do with a lot of the suicides. People were understanding they were going to be arrested.
Right, there's been nine suicides so far.
Yeah. Well, so something about that, and when that happens, it may be a month where it might disrupt a few things. They was telling people, get your water, get your canned goods. You might be, you know, there might be a little disruption with the economy, but it's going to change. And it has to do with the actions of the individual. And the Army is going to actually support us because they want a common law government. And it's in the Constitution, the original Constitution.
Right.
So it was really interesting stuff, and I was thinking about you.
I'll give you my take on this whole scenario.
Sure.
I personally have a dark view of, you know, that whole scenario about how people are trying to give people this sense of hope regarding that people on the inside are somehow on the side of truth and reversing the trend towards slavery. I do not think that that's the case personally. And again, people will say this is a dark worldview and a dark view of your fellow man. When I see the mindset that people inside government, inside police, inside military institutions are in, to me, it is so exceedingly few and far between. You know, I don't know where anybody is coming up with the idea that people inside any of these institutions are knowledgeable about what's going on in the world to any degree whatsoever. I see them under 100% locked down, hardcore mind control when it comes to anything that remotely resembles real truth. They still completely believe in authority. They still completely believe in the legitimacy of government at all. And I think what's being done there, if I'm going to be truthful and honest about what I see this scenario as, is giving people a tonic called false hope that somehow the white hats are going to rush in and save the day. And action on the part of the common everyday people is not going to be deeply required when it comes to this. It's like a sit down, you know, wait for them to handle the situation type scenario and just bunker down with, you know, a few weeks of supplies. I don't see any scenario playing out that easily with where we're at. You know, the only way that anything could play out in some form that was relatively painless in that regard is if consciousness began to change in such a huge way that I would claim we're having a mass awakening. And I don't see that mass awakening take place. I see a tiny, very tiny amount of people awakening to actual truth. I think I said it last time on the show, and I'll say it again. People ask me, well, when would you say that an actual real mass awakening is taking place? And my answer to that is always the same. When so many police and so many military personnel and so many government employees and so many bankers who have been propping up the paradigm of slavery begin quitting their jobs, whether they have another job lined up or not, and even accepting they might possibly live in poverty, okay? When they begin saying, I will not do this task anymore, I will not partake in this activity anymore, not one day longer, okay? And they quit their jobs in such massive waves, in such unimaginably large numbers, that these institutions have to admit to the public and out on the major mainstream media, we can't find enough people to do this work anymore. No one will volunteer to do this work, no matter what we offer to pay them. Then I'll tell you a mass awakening is occurring on Earth. Not a moment until.
Yeah.
Well, that's right. It has to be. It has to be.
I mean, you can envision it. You can envision what I've just laid out there. Now you are going to get an idea of how far we are away from that as a species.
Yeah, I mean, it's
I'm not here to tell people what's comfortable. See, a guy like that is going to come out and tell you what you want to hear. So you go back and listen to him more and more and more. I'm going to tell you the hardcore truth, even if it makes you say, I never want to hear a word that comes out of this guy's mouth ever again. I'm not here to be your friend. I'm not here to comfort you. I am here to tell the truth regarding what is taking place on Earth. That's all all my work is to do. That's what I am charged with doing, and that's what the great work that I have accepted is for me to do. Nothing else. It's not a popularity contest. It has nothing to do with anybody liking me. I don't care whether I'm hated. I don't care whether people want to kill me for what I say. I'm going to say the truth as I see it, okay, based on the most honest assessment that I can give people regarding what is actually taking place around me, as I can logically understand it. So the other thing I want to say regarding that gentleman's work, and I do think I've heard who you're talking about, I may be getting this person confused with another person in the exopolitics realm. I think his name was Tolek, who was making the rounds months back or a couple of years back. That's who I think I was confusing this person that you're referring to, Drake, with. But when he's talking about the sovereign movement, okay, and this is what delineates and separates the sovereign, quote, movement with the actual knowledge of sovereignty. They are two different things, okay? And I'm not saying that all people who try to do work in the sovereign or sovereign citizen movement are bad or negative or disinfo. It's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is there's a difference between actual sovereignty in nature and the sovereignty so-called movement. So if you have to go and file any paperwork to ask someone to agree to allow you to take on a certain status or to exercise certain rights, are you really sovereign? Or are you capitulating to their authority by even saying, I have to go to them and appeal to their authority to file paperwork and get them to agree?
Right.
That means you're capitulating to their authority right there. I don't need to sign one thing on earth for me to be a sovereign being in nature. I'm already a sovereign being. You're already a sovereign being. Every being in the universe is already sovereign now in nature. In nature is our inherent birthright gifted to us by the creator of this universe. We are sovereign under the creator and the creator's laws, the end. And it can never not be that. It can never not be that way.
Right.
See, The deception within this whole movement called the sovereign movement or the sovereign citizens movement, quote unquote, is that paperwork can somehow change your status in nature. And of course it cannot. Nobody can grant me my sovereignty. My sovereignty is a birthright granted to me by God. I'm already a sovereign being, period, the end, forever. That's it.
I love you, Mark. You're fabulous.
Yeah.
I love him.
That's it. The problem is not everyone here understands that truth.
Right.
Therein
right.
lies the problem.
Yeah.
Until we can get every being on this planet to understand that unreversible truth that cannot be any other way in nature, we're not making any headway. That's what has to be deeply understood. And see, this is what I say. This is why this community of researchers and people who are delving into this material have to come together with the so-called freedom movement. As long as there's a divide there, we're not going to be making headway as a species.
Mm-hmm.
We need to make the freedom movement, the political activists, understand the material that the UFO slash exopolitical slash, extraterrestrial, extra-dimensional community understands, and vice versa. We need to bring the issues regarding human freedom that a lot of people in these political and freedom movements understand. We need to make that at the fore of the UFO slash alien slash extraterrestrial community. When
right.
we develop a blending and a merging and a sharing of knowledge between these two communities, then we're going to start making a lot of headway as a species to reverse this situation that we're all in. Now, I like to look at myself as maybe a very small part in that liaison, you know, maybe somebody who's going to try to act as, you know, saying, hey, guys, we need to shake hands here. We need to work on the same page and understand there's more for both of these communities to know, a lot more that's actively right now being ignored or just not really deeply integrated and understood. And when we come together and we start to understand these things, then we're going to make progress.
Yeah. Well, you know, what happens in many cases, too, especially with us here in the UFO and abduction field, a lot of times when we begin to move into the mainstream and try to join hands with the freedom movement, many times that's interfered with by you-know-who and, the government. And, we're either criticized, they're criticized. There's always a wall being put between us. And, you know, if people would only realize that that's not a real wall, that's an imaginary wall,
yes.
that's just something that's there to play into our conscious minds, not our unconscious minds. Gee, I can't do that because they told me I couldn't. We're just sort of separate.
I'd like to briefly speak on the strengths and weaknesses of these two communities.
Yeah.
And again, these are generalizations. I don't want to paint with a totally broad stroke and say it's this way with all people involved. Please understand
right.
that. I see the UFO community as more open-minded. And I'll just use the term UFO community and freedom community, just so.
Yeah,
you know,
that's fine.
Or extraterrestrial community and freedom community. Let's just use those terms to generalize. The extraterrestrial community seems to be, they have the right side of the brain, the right brain hemisphere, working for them, okay? And so they're very open-minded, and they're willing to take in things that are seemingly paranormal or strange. They work in those realms. They work in the realms of the strange, the unusual, the extra-normal realms, the paranormal realms. So that's not where their problem is. That's their strength. Where their problem is in taking things into the realm of action and activism. And I'm not saying all of them. Again, there's many activists within this community that are doing really great work. What I'm saying is, in general, I feel that the masculine aspect of the personality as a whole is somewhat lacking within this community. And we need to understand our own sovereignty, and we need to understand more action is required on our part to create the required conditions. Whereas it's the exact reversal on the so-called freedom community's side. And, I joke around, it's actually quite serious. I say we don't really have a freedom community. We have what I call the My Freedom Movement. You know, it's people that are concerned about their freedom, but people who are somewhat different from them, you know, well, then somehow the same things don't apply to them. And, you know, you could even look into non-human beings like animals, and they say, well, their rights aren't the same somehow as our rights, and you know, we can't apply what we say we want for us to the animal kingdom either, you know. And you can get into whole debates and discussions and even full-blown arguments on this topic, but in general I see the My Freedom Movement as a little bit too rigidly skeptical and left-brained. And their minds are somewhat closed on the right brain hemisphere side, which is the side that, you know, takes in the unknown variables and is the more imaginative and intuitive and creative aspect. That part is a little bit lacking as a whole in that community, and their minds aren't as open to some of the very hyper-strange possibilities and realities that the UFO and extraterrestrial movement slash community is very open-minded to.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, once the UFO community opens up that masculine side and the so-called freedom movement opens up that feminine side a little bit more, and I think that those are going to be the dynamics in consciousness that are going to allow those communities to bridge together and eventually begin working together.
Wow.
Yeah, let's take a short break here, and when we come back, Mark, I'm going to hit you with the question of how do you suggest that we bring the two sides together? Because we're actually with the via this radio show, we're really trying to get some truth out there, spread out to a wider audience, try to hit the mainstream.
Sure.
Maybe we can talk a little bit about what your suggestions might be for us to bring the two sides together.
Sure, that sounds like a great idea, Michael. And also, if there's any callers, I'd love to take some calls from the listening audience, because I know we didn't have too much time to do that last time, but if anybody out there has any questions, I'd love to take their calls.
Yeah, also, Mark, we're not limited to 2 hours either tonight. So, you know, if you still have information or we still have callers,
sure,
we're willing to wait.
That's
here.
Fine.
So call in people's...
I can go a little bit longer.
Okay.
Yeah, I can go a little bit longer if need be, definitely.
Excellent. 646-716. Oh, my God, what are the last
8070.
646-716-8070, right in front of me on my screen. We're going to take a short break, folks, and we'll be right back.
Okay.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for tuning in tonight. It's been just an amazing time already. So we're going to be bringing everybody back here momentarily.
And we're back. We're back now with Mark here. And remember the phone number is 646-716-8070. Folks, please give us a call. Ask Mark any question. He's ready for it. He's knowledgeable. He has done the research, and he's here for you tonight. So, Mark, Yeah.
And Mike, before we jump into that, I think we're at a really great point here in the show. Just to mention, everybody that is listening online, the chat room is full. There's a ton of people online.
Oh, wow.
So just a reminder to everybody, you can field your questions in there. We'll definitely bring them up to Mark here, so don't be afraid to ask anything. And our listener from the UK, unfortunately, had to go, but we had somebody.
Oh, boy.
That,
yeah.
Some of my videos on my YouTube channel emailed me or sent me a message on Facebook regarding his own experiences and then learned about this site and, our radio show and was tuning in tonight. So great reach. And, so I just wanted to say a thank you to that those folks. And quickly, Mark, I had just to go back to one of your previous topics about the controlling of information and how in the past, in our ancient past, it was more direct control. And I thought of many specific examples of that. You know, anything that dealt with holy knowledge or like written knowledge, it was kept to the ruling or the elite class. And they could be shamans, they could have been medicine men, they could have been holy men, or they could have been royalty. But the common man was never allowed to have the power of reading or understand how, you know, the holy men, you know, communed with God or, you know, had these conversations. And, you know, to your point, I see direct evidence in all of our ancient cultures of that direct control over information, stopping mankind from knowing, you know, these pieces of information. And, you know, you fast forward a couple thousand years to where we are today, and it's the complete opposite. We have all the information on our fingertips, and it's through more overt means and covert means that the mind control and the, you know, the direction of knowledge and keeping that knowledge away from people is done. So I wanted to interject that before we got back into, you know, what the two communities could do, because that just really struck a chord with me.
Hmm. Oh, absolutely, Chris. Really well said. And, this goes right back to the truth discovery methodology known as the Trivium. And I speak a lot about this in my work. And if you watch my natural law seminar, which I feel is probably the most important work that I've put out there with the help of the people who hosted it, Art and Chris Capozzi, and who recorded it, the people from Tragedy and Hope Communications. It was a great opportunity to come forward and really share what I see as the ultimate solution to the human condition. And that is the deep understanding of natural law or the laws of morality or what you simply might call the true or real laws of attraction that we work within the boundaries of to create our shared reality here on Earth. And I post a very important slide in that seminar that is called How Our Reality is Built. If someone really deeply, deeply understands that slide, if they can really see that slide and really come to a deep understanding of what I've laid out in that slide, they really understand how everything works, how just about everything in our whole condition, our whole circumstance works. And it's very simple. You have to look at reality as three basic building blocks that then generate an outcome, which you could look at as a fourth block that goes on top of the other three. Very simple model. Just envision this in your mind. I could even give you a graphic to post up with the podcast, or you could just, again, check it out in my natural law seminar. The bottom of this little four block structure, if you will, is available information. And that constitutes potential knowledge that we can take into ourselves, that we can process, that we can come to an understanding of, and then we can act upon. It's potential knowledge. It's what I've referred to before as all the individual building blocks of knowledge, or what in the Trivium method they called grammar. Like, you know, words form grammar in our language. Then we put them all together, and then we can form sentences and whole constructural ideas. You know, but you have to have the grammar of a language first. Just like if you want to understand something and then do something positive and orderly and generates something that you say you want with, then you have to have all the building blocks of knowledge on how to do that. So knowledge is at the very bottom. Now, if there's lack of knowledge, ignorance, then you're, you know, dead in the water from the very beginning of this process, of this threefold process. Above the knowledge step, you have the understanding stage. So what you're doing in that stage is you're processing the knowledge. These are mental processes, decision-making processes that you do with that those information building blocks that you took into yourself, that you aggregated in the first stage. And those processes, those transforms that you're doing upon that information with your mind, okay, are going to be done by each individual based on the knowledge, the available knowledge that they have themselves taken in. So this is why, you know, if an individual doesn't have a lot of knowledge, they're not going to be able to make accurate decisions about how they should be behaving. Think about it from just a logical perspective. People act on what they believe that they know or what they actually do know, okay? Now, if that knowledge is sound and it's based in truth, then they're going to be making accurate decisions. And when they act, they're going to be creating things that is in alignment with what they say they want to create. If, on the other hand, their knowledge is bad, that they haven't done the homework to aggregate that knowledge, or if they haven't accurately understood those building blocks of the foundation for knowledge, then they're going to make poor judgment decisions. So this is the third step, okay? In the Trivium, it's known as wisdom or rhetoric in different flavors or variants of the Trivium method. This is behavior, okay? Wisdom is what we do with what we have come to understand. So each individual in any given society, okay, they're gonna base the quality of their behavior is going to be based on the quality of their decision-making processes that they did in step two, and that quality is in turn based on the available knowledge that they took in. Then what happens when we act and our whole society is taking actions in the aggregate numbers as a whole, as a species? A manifested reality is formed, and a condition then plays out in our experience. So, and the quality of that condition that manifests in any society is going to be based upon the aggregate quality of the behavior that is taking place within that society. This is known as the law of freedom. As moral behavior increases, freedom will increase for a species. As immoral behavior increases within a society, that species will become more and more enslaved. And there you have in a nutshell why we're in the situation that we're in. Because we don't know the true difference between right and wrong. We don't know the true difference between moral action and immoral action. And In aggregate numbers, people are making poor decisions on how they should behave. And they're behaving against the laws of morality or natural law. And therefore, they're getting a chaotic and disorderly outcome that's called slavery. And as long as their thoughts are based in incorrect information, incorrect knowledge, and that's driving their understanding and behavior, okay, their misunderstanding and their immoral behavior, expect more slavery, ladies and gentlemen. Order and freedom cannot be created with ignorance. It's impossible. As morality increases, freedom increases. As the knowledge of truth of the difference between right and wrong, and then we willfully choose right behavior over wrong behavior, as more of that happens in the aggregate within any society, that society is going to achieve more freedom in their lives. When the opposite, happens when there's widespread ignorance and there's a lack of understanding of the difference between right and wrong behavior? Expect chains and bondage for as long as those conditions and behavior are in place. And it can never be any different. It can never be any other way. That's how our reality is built. What I have just laid out right there in that little model, four simple building blocks, knowledge or available information, decision-making processes that lead to understanding, and then human behavior, which constitutes either wisdom or the lack of wisdom, ultimately generating our reality, the manifested reality, which we call the human experience or the human condition. That is the real law of attraction, ladies and gentlemen. It's not what's laid out in the New Age, the New Cage variant called The Secret. What I've just laid out there in that section is the real laws of attraction, okay? And if we want to understand how we can best put them to work in our lives, the knowledge that is required, the bottom of that structure, the base of that structure, is the knowledge of the absolute objective difference between right and wrong behavior. That's what conscience is. And the reason humanity is enslaved is it still has not developed the knowledge known as conscience. Conscience is knowledge, ladies and gentlemen. It is not action. I'll say that once again. Conscience is knowledge. It is not action. The exercise of conscience is knowledge. Right in the word, we're told what conscience means. Con means together or with is a Latin prefix. Latin prefix con means together or with or common to. And then we put that together with the second part of the word, science. Science comes from the Latin sciere. Sciere means to know or to understand. So we put those root words together. Science, scio, sciere, together with the prefix con, means to know together or to have common sense knowledge. And that's why humanity is enslaved, because we don't have common sense knowledge of the difference between right and wrong. And moral relativism reigns supreme in our society, and people erroneously believe that there is, it's all based in subjective opinion, right and wrong, and that there is no objective standard and knowledge of the absolute definitive difference between right action and wrong action. And until humanity straightens its head out on that issue and understands that that right and wrong are things that are not subjective, they are objective, absolute realities. And the behavior that we take, whether it is based on the knowledge of the difference between right and wrong, or whether it's based on ignorance of the difference between right and wrong, is going to dictate the quality of the shared human experience in the aggregate. That's the real law of attraction, ladies and gentlemen. It's been known as many different things: the laws of cause and effect, the laws of karmic consequence, the laws of consequentialism, the laws of morality, God's law. It doesn't make a difference what you call it. Call it whatever you want. Okay? It is how our reality is built, and it is based upon our free will. It's not a deterministic force. We have free will to accept the laws that govern this universe, or we have free will to reject them. When we accept them, when we align our behavior to those laws, we achieve orderly results in our experience called freedom, prosperity, peace, happiness, etc. When we refuse to align our behavior to those laws, we get the opposite result. We get disorder, chaos, slavery, death, extinction. So it's all a free will choice. It's all a free will choice. We have free will to align our behavior to that which is, to the truth. Or we have free will to ignore that which is. Like I said before, respect existence or expect resistance. That's how it works. That's the real law of attraction right there. And so, to go back to Chris's question, okay, how would you control that outcome? Would you try to control it from the level of manifested reality? Would you try to control it from the level of just behavior? You could control it from the level of – you can't control it from the level of manifested reality. That's what already is. It's done. It's what's taken place. Too late. Too late to control that. That's what has happened, okay, in the past or in the present moment. Done already, okay? That's the actual manifested outcome. Can you control it from the third level, from the level of human behavior? Yes, but with a whole lot of energy. You have to exercise overt control through physical mechanisms, physical ball and chain slavery method, very, very high energy expenditure. Can it be done? Yes, it can be done. You're going to need a whole lot of people to do it. And as soon as people really deeply understand they're being held under duress, they're going to rebel, openly rebel. Because beings don't like to be held under physical ball and chain shackled slavery. So that's a very inefficient place to do control from. Well, can you go one level down? Can you do it from the level of decision-making processes? What's that called? That's called mind control. And that works. It's very effective. Mm. You can try to affect people's decision-making processes so that they come to inaccurate understandings of information. Okay? And that's very active in our society, this methodology. But it's still not as efficient as the ultimate method of control, of controlling a population. And that's going down to the base level of available information. If you can withhold the building blocks, the available information, or the grammar, okay, then you have people exactly where you want them from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't need to control anything else. You don't need to try to go and manipulate people's minds. You're just withholding the data that they need to understand to create the conditions that they want to understand. And that occultation of knowledge is the most effective method of controlling a society. Occult means to hide, to occult something. It means to hide or to conceal or to keep it secret or to keep it away from someone's sight. That's what to occult something means. So this is what people need to understand, the actual real definition of occult. It means hidden. And as a verb, it means to hide, to conceal, to keep secret from someone else. That's how real control is done. So then the question that people must ask is, well, then what is the occulted knowledge that you're talking about, that you're referring to? What is this available information? And yet, is it available? Yeah, you better well believe that it is available. It isn't, as Chris said, it is not a matter that this information is unavailable to us. Is it somewhat controlled? It is, but it's really out there. How it's controlled in the modern world is through a very covert methodology. It's called dissuasion. We are dissuaded from looking into these vistas of knowledge. It isn't that these areas of knowledge are completely cut off from us and are unavailable. If that were the case, I would have much more sympathy for humanity's current situation, because that would mean they really don't have any access to what they need to free themselves. But can we ask ourselves honestly, is that the case? Is that true? Do we not have access to the information that we need access to truly become free? No, that's not true. We do have the access to that data, to that information. What's happening in humanity is we are willfully, deliberately ignoring it. And we're doing that through the mind control methodology of dissuasion. This is what the media is there to do. They're there to tell people, you don't need to know that. Don't look, and religion is also a big part of this. So is the New Age movement, ladies and gentlemen. They're there to tell people, don't look into matters of the occult. You don't. First of all, whether you know, they'll put the notion forward into many people's minds. First of all, it's all fantasy and nonsense. It doesn't have anything to do with reality whatsoever. Or even if you did think it has something to do with anything that's really going on, it's all bad and negative. And we have to reinforce this negative connotation of the word occult as being evil or bad. The word occult means hidden, and it refers to hidden knowledge. So then, what is the knowledge of the occult? What knowledge does the occult constitute and comprise? Well, it comprises two bodies of information. It comprises the knowledge of how the human psyche or the mind actually works, our desires, our hidden motivations, our makeup, our subconscious, etc., and so forth. This could be called the knowledge of the microcosmic world, the knowledge of the individuated units of consciousness called individuals, okay? Our psyche, our individual expressions of consciousness, okay? That's the microcosmic knowledge of the occult. It's been known as the minor or lesser arcana, which is a Latin or Greek word for knowledge. Then we have the major arcana, or the greater macrocosmic knowledge. What is that? Those are the physical, the knowledge of how the physical sciences work that, that govern matter, and how natural law operates, the laws that govern behavioral consequence and free will choice. That is what I refer to under the umbrella term natural law, or what has been called cosmic law, universal law, spiritual law, moral law, God's law. It doesn't make a difference what label you want to slap on that. The laws of cause and effect, the laws of consequence, you know, the laws of attraction, et cetera, so forth. Many, many different names for the same set body of laws that are non-man-made, binding, universal, immutable conditions that govern the consequences of the free will decisions that we enact through our behaviors. So that's the occult in a nutshell. That's what the occult comprises. Now think about that. What doesn't fall into one of those two categories of knowledge? Either the knowledge of consciousness, the mind, the psyche, the individual expressions for consciousness on an individual level, and then how all the laws of nature, physical and spiritual, function. What does not fall into that knowledge? Nothing. So the knowledge of the occult is the knowledge of everything. And again, why is it occulted? It's hidden to create a power differential. If you could take essentially the knowledge of everything that is vital and important to understand, in other words, the building blocks of available information that we build our reality with, and you hide it, why on earth, why in the universe would anyone try to hide it? That's the next question that has to be asked. It's hidden to create and maintain a power differential by maintaining a differential of knowledge and ignorance. If you have all the knowledge of how those things work and you're deliberately trying to dissuade people from looking into it by saying, oh no, that's all bad, that's all evil stuff, you should never look into that, or dissuading them by saying, oh no, none of that's important, it's all nonsense and you don't need to know any of it. And then as a result of them not looking into it, this whole other class of people remain completely ignorant to everything that's going on both within them and around them, what kind of level of power differential is going to manifest itself between those two classes of individuals?
Mm.
Total differential in power.
Right.
And that's where we're at. That's where we're at. Because people do not want to understand what the occult really is, delve into that body of knowledge and study it and deeply integrate it into themselves, and in doing so, completely empower themselves to take full responsibility for how they are creating their reality in the aggregate, not on just an individual level, but as a species in aggregate numbers.
And I think that's
so.
I
hope that answers your question, Chris.
Oh,
that's
absolutely
the reason the controllers have controlled it from that level of the equation, from availability of knowledge and occulting that knowledge, and then dissuading people from ever asking any questions about that body of knowledge.
Well, I think that definitely answered my question, and I've got a couple things from the chat room here to
Excellent.
Kind of tie in exactly what you were just speaking about. The first was not so much a bit of a caution, but I can understand where they're coming from, and I want to just lay these two out, and maybe we can frame that into the next segment.
Sure.
The comment was that, you know, what you're speaking about and the state of the world seems to be, you know, much more of a depressing doom and gloom type of, you know, version of reality. And the way that it sounds and the information that you see seems like the problem is insurmountable. So why should we even try if it's all going to fail anyway?
Can I just address that part right there? Let me address that part. Okay.
Yeah.
First of all, I don't have a doom and gloom scenario. What my take on this is looking at it from a very practical, real-world, feet-on-the-ground view, okay, based on how things actually are, not how I want them to be.
Mm-hmm.
This is the problem that colors so many people's consciousness. They want things to be different. And so they'll try to say, things aren't actually the way they are now, because I don't want them to be that way. See, do I want things to be different? Absolutely. I don't want slavery to continue. I stand against all forms of slavery. But for me to deny that slavery is the current condition is negativity. Mm-hmm. To deny that is negative, because ignorance is negative. By denying the current situation of what is, not to say, because I don't want it to be a quote-unquote negative situation or a quote-unquote doom and gloom scenario, then I can't acknowledge the reality of what is. That's mm-hmm. what this person's really saying. And, you know, they may not want to hear it like that. Well, whatever. Tough. I'm not going to tell you what you want to hear. I'm going to tell you the truth as I currently see it.
Right.
That attitude of saying that this is just doom and gloom and it's not looking at things the way they really are is, once again, it's a new cage approach and looking at things from seeing the world through rose-colored glasses and from a overly optimistic perspective. I'm not telling you it must be this way and there's nothing you could do about it. When did those words ever leave my mouth in eight
right.
years of speaking this information to other people?
I have not heard them.
Any of my literature. You will not
yeah.
be able to do it, because I've
right.
never
I've
made that
it.
Statement and never will. Okay? This scenario can be changed. It is changeable. It is not changeable based on the current level of human consciousness.
Mm.
If the current level of human consciousness stays the way that it is, do not expect change to occur in the human condition. Get
right.
over it. It mm-hmm. cannot occur that way. What you would be saying, okay, this is the equivalent of what you would be saying. For anybody that thinks the aggregate quality of human consciousness can remain even remotely close to the way that it is now, and we can somehow change the human condition called slavery and make it into freedom, okay, without doing the work to change human consciousness, okay, it is the equivalent of this scenario. I have just put clothes in my washing machine, okay, and I've washed them, I've put the laundry detergent in, I've washed them, I've run it through the cycle, okay, and it's going to go through the spin cycle, but then after that's done, they're still completely wet. Okay, they may not be so wet I can wring them out, but I'm not going to put them on like that. I'm not certainly not going to just take them right out of the washer and put them right on. Okay, you'd probably, you know, take on some, you know, bacteria that way real soon, and it wouldn't be good conditions. You want to dry your clothes before you put them on your body, whether you take them outside on a sunny day and dry them on a clothesline, or you put them in a dryer and do it electrically through heat. Okay, so the equivalent of saying that the condition on Earth is going to change without human consciousness deeply changing based on where it's at right now, okay, is like saying, I'm going to dry those clothes by taking them in the bushel that I put them in after I take them out of the washer, taking them out into my backyard, and instead of hanging them on the clothesline, I'm going to turn on my garden hose, and I'm going to put it on jet setting, and I'm going to squirt that garden hose directly into that bushel of laundry. And I'll dry it that way. Don't worry about it. It'll get done. You just sit here and watch. I will add this polarity to that state of wetness, which is more wetness, mm-hmm. and the clothes will become dry. Okay? You will be there forever and never get that done. Never.
Mm-hmm.
It will never occur that way. The polarity must be the opposite. It must be shift and change to the opposite. What is the current polarity of the human condition? Is it deep knowledge and awareness, ladies and gentlemen? Could you honestly say that's the current human condition? And be honest with yourself and look at yourself in the mirror and state the phrase to your face in the mirror, the current human condition in aggregate numbers, as a species, humanity is deeply knowledgeable, highly enlightened, knowledgeable in consciousness about what's going on both within itself and in its environmental conditions. Can you look at yourself in a mirror and make that statement without laughing at your dishonesty with yourself?
I'd be a liar.
I'll tell you,
yeah.
You're mentally ill.
I'd be a liar.
You're mentally
yeah.
ill if you can make that statement.
I would be a liar.
Okay?
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
That's not negativity. There's nothing negative in what I've just said, ladies and gentlemen.
That's realism.
That is true.
True.
It doesn't mean it can't be changed. Can we take in information and become knowledgeable and enlightened? Yes. That can be done. I've done it. I consider myself an enlightened human being. And that's not, I'm not telling you I'm perfect, because this is another new cage deception, folks.
Right.
Enlightenment does not equate to perfection. If you believe that, you've bought into a new age deception. I'm enlightened, but I am not perfect. If you expect perfection in the 3D realm, you are expecting what never has existed, what does not exist now, and what never will exist.
Correct.
If you are incarnate in the three-dimensional space-time continuum known as the universe or this cosmos, there is not going to be perfection in the individuated monad form of consciousness anywhere in the 3D universe. If you're expecting that and you're equating that to the notion of enlightened, it is enlightenment. It does not exist.
You're going to be waiting for a very
enlightenment is being knowledgeable and knowing, carrying knowledge and knowing what is truly going on both within your psyche and in the environmental conditions that exist around you and how natural law functions. If you have that knowledge and you carry it within you and you're correct about it, that's enlightenment. That's the state of enlightenment. I consider myself enlightened, not perfect, but enlightened. Could the vast majority of human beings make the same statement? Could you say that the vast majority of human beings are at a high level of consciousness? Because I can't make that statement. I see a tiny, 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 infinitesimally small, almost paltry number of people on Earth as being truly enlightened beings. There are many that are out there. I'm not saying there are none, okay? The quality of that being exists in the world. They are out there. But they're so few and far between and scattered to the four winds, to the four corners of the Earth.
Yeah.
That it is a paltry number. If we're being honest with ourselves, and I'm not saying this to disempower people or to make them upset or to say, oh, look at this as just an unwinnable situation. I'm telling people what our work is to do. If you are knowledgeable, you need to spread that knowledge to other people. You need to wrestle with their unconsciousness and make them listen and make them want to get involved in learning. And you know what? That's the hardest work there is to do on Earth. That's why so few people are doing it. The great work is to influence your current fellow man and woman to abandon their false religions, to abandon their false belief systems that hold them back and keep them in chains, bondage, and slavery, and then to get them to look at the truth of that which is, and then to help motivate them and inspire them to change it. You know, I just heard from a big member of the extraterrestrial / UFO community. I can't remember his name off the top of my head, so I don't want to state his name. I'm going to eventually state his name. I don't want to give the wrong person's name, okay? Mm-hmm. So maybe I'll do it in a future interview or on my own radio show. But this is a well-known individual, and he's made the statement, human beings aren't here to change the world and to change others. They're here to be changed by the world, by the current dark conditions that exist here on Earth. And I thought that is just the most ridiculous, nonsensical, egoic statement that I have ever heard uttered.
Wow.
Okay?
Yeah.
To say it isn't our responsibility to actually change the reality of slavery. Imagine that. That's not our responsibility. We're under the condition of slavery, and it's not our responsibility to break that condition and change it, for not just for us, but for all beings under that condition. I mean, you have to be kidding if you think a statement like that is real spirituality. You've got to be joking with yourself.
I'm laughing, yeah.
Real spirituality is the understanding. True streetwise spirituality is the deep understanding that what our work here to do is on the earth, on the ground, right here in the physical world, is to end the condition of slavery for all beings, not just human beings, for all beings.
Right.
Now,
right.
That's the great work, ladies and gentlemen. Get over it. That's what our work is here. That's what you came here to do as a spiritual warrior of light. And you know what? That's what you got sidetracked from
yeah.
that mission, by buying all into this new cage bull crap. Okay? this new age bull crap. Pardon my you know, just harshness on this. But it really, really upsets me that so many warriors have been taken off this mission. Because we came here in numbers, folks. Why do you think there's so many numbers here?
Yeah. You think
that's an accident, that the population exploded the way it did? No, that's no accident. That's the warrior class arriving on Earth. You know what happened? We got put into the new cage.
Mm-hmm.
They came up with a new paradigm, the new religion, and they filtered us right into there, like cattle into the herd pen. You know, that's what they did, by getting us to believe these ridiculous notions, like we can't change our condition, evil is necessary and is always going to be present, more new age nonsense garbage. You know, that we're not here to change the world. We're here to be changed by these evil conditions and by slavery.
Mm.
Oh, don't get me wrong. The world should change you. You should recognize the condition that the world's in, and it should change you. But then you got to step up to the plate, and
right. You
got to make change happen in this world by an act of your will, by influencing other people's minds.
Right.
And helping to get their minds out of mind control. No, nobody wants part of that work. They say, oh, that's not my responsibility. I just work on myself.
Well,
good luck
in the cage. Right. Exactly.
Good luck.
Exactly.
I've got a bit of a follow-up question, and hopefully this can then lead directly into, you know, how to bring these two different communities together. But somebody in the in chat asked, if you could speak on the role of forging and operating through an anonymous entity. In other words, they see some benefit in working like under the radar, but it would cost a lot of time and energy, and you'll lose the impact of standing as a role model for people to simply start speaking truth. So I think what they're asking is, you know, instead of being that direct approach, you know, in your face, you know, could there still be merit in, you know, doing it, you know, just not so much secretly, but, you know, still contributing.
Yeah, I'm going to take the extreme position on this and say, no, that's total cowardice.
Mm. Okay.
Stand up, use your real name, stand in the truth, speak the truth unapologetically in a state of courage. That's enlightenment. That's how we really affect real world change. We do that in numbers, it's game over. Humanity does that in numbers and steps into their own power that way. I don't care what the nature of this force that's controlling us is. I don't care if it's demonic. I don't care if it's extra-dimensional. I don't care if it's extraterrestrial. I don't care if it's terrestrial. I don't care if it's interterrestrial. I don't care if it's satanic, you know, in some kind of a actual demonic Christian, traditional Christian form of the devil. I don't care what the nature of that force attempting to control us is. We step up, stand into that power of courage and truth, and it is game over. No force can stand against that level of truth and courage. Can't be done. And that's what humanity's work is to do.
Yeah,
you definitely answered that question.
My answer is, my answer to that is, there's nothing to it but to do it.
There you go.
Start now. The universe will guide you. You'll say, where do I start? How do I begin? Same way I started. I needed somebody to put a boot up my rear end for me to start doing this.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I don't want to be apologetic, and I don't want to be soft on people who ask a question like that. I want to put my foot in their rear end like someone had to do to me. I know how long it took me to start talking on this. I knew about this for years before I started talking on it. And sometimes I still beat myself up about how long I stayed silent.
Mm.
Okay? I try not to do that. But I say, why didn't I start this sooner? Why didn't I start this sooner? Why didn't I start this sooner? You know, that thought still runs through my mind. Don't make that same mistake. If you're knowledgeable, start speaking the truth to other people, to whoever will listen. And keep standing in that truth, period. Persistence is required. Willpower is required. That's what true care is all about. Do you know this condition needs to be changed and should be changed according to the laws of morality? Well, then step into that power and do it. There's no excuses. If you're not doing that, you're making an excuse. You're not responsible. You are not taking on your personal ability to respond to a situation that should be changed.
Correct.
Should be changed. That's it. And again, for me to start doing that, as knowledgeable as I was and having all this information, I still stayed silent for years because I was in that mindset. You know, are people going to accept what I say? Is this going to cut me off from other members of my family and friends? And I'm going to, you know, totally find myself, you know, ostracized from them? Did that happen with many people? Yeah, it did. Got to accept that, folks. And you got to keep saying the truth, even if that happens. You got to keep saying it. Doesn't make a difference who ostracizes you. You can't have attachment even to the other people who you may even say that you love in this life. You have to love the truth more than any other human being. The truth has to be your first responsibility and the first thing that you have an obligation to, the end. Everything else comes second to that. That's what the great work is. Doesn't make a difference who's going to accept it. Doesn't make a difference who's going to ostracize you. You let that happen, you let the chips fall where they may, and you stand in that power. Once you do that, the universe comes to your aid and assistance. And nothing can defeat that power. It's the strongest force in the universe because truth is love is God. That's the truth. So I hope that answers the question of where I think when it comes to people just standing in on the sidelines. This isn't a spectator sport. It's not a movie you're watching on the screen. You're in a condition of slavery in real life. Get involved and get involved in the process of ending it. That's what the great work is. That's what we're all here to do. My mission is not different from your mission. My purpose for being here at this time is no different than yours. And you, people will say, Mark, you're telling me what my work is the same as what you're claiming your work is. Yes. Yes, I am. There is no difference in work for anybody. We are here to do the same thing at this time. Because if slavery is the condition, what person should not come forward to end that condition?
Right.
Answer that. Everyone should come forward to end that condition. That's everyone's shared work. And you know, like Carl Jung said, real enlightenment is bringing light to the darkness, bringing consciousness to a world that is trapped in the state of darkness. That's the hardest work there is to do, and that's why that work is so shunned and unpopular, paraphrasing his quote. You know, that's real alchemy. Real alchemy is converting dark consciousness, which is lead symbolically, into light consciousness, which is gold symbolically. Most people do not have the willpower or the courage to get involved in doing that work. And that's what needs to change. We need more alchemists in the world. We need more truth seekers in the world. We need more truth speakers in the world. We need more teachers of natural law. We need more teachers of occulted information in the world. And until people step into that power and start doing that great work, like I said, folks, expect bondage. Expect slavery to continue. That's not negativity. That's the reality of how the law of attraction works. I'm not telling you anything negative or telling you it's all doom and gloom. Can it be changed? Yes. Are there specific requirements for making that change come into physical manifestation? You better believe it, and you better start understanding what those requirements are if you want slavery not to be the condition of humanity any longer.
Mm-hmm.
So to that point, what I'd like to understand, and, you know, I have definitely faced not so much, you know, objections to, but I've definitely faced that, well, that's a little too fringe for me, and I really don't want to hear about it, you know, from people of the, quote-unquote, freedom movement when breaching the subject of UFOs or alien abduction.
Well, also and, we've heard it from our families, too. I mean, let's face it.
Oh, absolutely.
Sure. And that's why I feel the way needs to be prepared to some of the more heavy material when it comes to the, quote, paranormal. I don't even like that term, but for lack of a better term, you know, we can throw that out there. It's really not paranormal. It's part of the normal actually occurring world that exists within nature, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But it's not our everyday experience, our experiential reality on a day-to-day basis, hence it's paranormal. So
Mark,
I think that's why we have to come together on common ground first. In other words, if we bridge the topic in the paranormal research community or the extraterrestrial research community regarding the current state of human freedom, or lack thereof, is better to say,
mm-hmm.
maybe a bridge will be open between these two communities, because then that freedom, so-called freedom movement, what I like to call the My Freedom Movement, unfortunately, because they mm-hmm. haven't really expanded their consciousness to understand in a deep way what's really holding slavery in place. But if this community were to do that and start really talking about issues regarding freedom, and like I said on the last show, that's why I like some of the realms that researchers like Linda Moulton Howe are going into. Richard Dolan, who's the person who wrote Communion?
Whitney Strieber.
You look at some of their modern work, their recent material, they're starting to talk about these issues regarding freedom. And other researchers are doing this in this field. I think they need to continue on those paths and go forward with that material. They're going to start to be liaisons, you know, like I would like to consider myself as. Again, I don't have as much experience speaking on the types of topics that they may, but I have done that somewhat. My presentation, Morality and Disclosure, I think is the work I'm really the most proud of when it comes to my foray into the extraterrestrial realm. Because if people have to understand, morality is so tied to this issue. You know, if we don't have a dedication to the truth, you know, disclosure isn't going to just magically manifest itself. That's what we all want, disclosure, truth. You know, the people who are holding back this information are immoral beings. You know, let's just come out and say it. You know, who actually withholds the truth regarding the existence of extraterrestrial presence on this planet and its continued interaction with human beings?
Mm-hmm.
Well, who does that? The media, the military above all else. The mm-hmm. immoral mm-hmm. people in military are at the height of that cover-up and in the intelligence agencies. Okay? People in media, all right? These are the people who are ultimately responsible. These are the groups in general that are ultimately responsible for the continuation of the lockdown on disclosure. Why? They're immoral people. They have no allegiance to truth whatsoever. They'll lie for a paycheck. They'll lie to keep their position
mm-hmm.
in
mm-hmm.
their institution. And we think they're good people? They're bad people by definition. By the very definition of what a bad person is.
How do you change people like that? How do you change people like that?
You don't. They have to change themselves by an act of their own will. You can only influence them to change. And the way you influence them to change is you have to make the truth a chorus that cannot be drowned out by lies and deception and mind control. Now, ask yourself, is the voice of truth that loud in our world? Because we're speaking it continuously, nonstop?
No. It's a whisper right now.
Good luck convincing yourself of that, but that's not the truth of what the reality is. A paltry handful of people are speaking the truth in that kind of an unapologetic fashion. And this is why these people remain immoral. They're not being told the difference between right and wrong. And they're being told somehow their behavior is acceptable and appreciated. You know? That they're great for being in these positions. Oh, they're defending the freedom of America. They're defending national security. Bull. You're lying to the people of Earth about what is.
Yes.
And you're an immoral being for doing it.
Yes.
And you're perpetuating slavery as a result. Now, when enough people say that right up in people's face, maybe we'll start influencing beings, immoral beings like that, to change. How about if their family disowns them? How about if their children say, I want nothing to do with you, Dad, till you change? Don't call me your daughter. Don't call me your son. You want to know what the Christ consciousness came here to do? Write it. Go look it up right in the book of Matthew. Anybody, Christians who want to quote Scripture. Jesus said, I didn't come here And again, like I said, look at this as a form of consciousness. Whether you believe in it as a historical personage or not is not the point. I understand astrotheology better than most other people. I could write books on it. Okay, so I don't want to hear the whole thing, oh, Jesus may have existed as, may never have existed as a historical personage. I get that. The message is the same and is absolutely valuable nonetheless. You know, he said, I come not to bring peace and tranquility. I've come to bring a sword to the people of earth, to divide families against each other. Where on one side you'll have people standing in truth, and on the other side you'll have people continuing to defend lies and deception. And a war will ensue between those two sides, a war in consciousness, a war between those who are actively standing in the power of truth and those who are defending the paradigm of slavery. There shouldn't be some kind of a harmonious, nice, peaceful coexistence between those two types of people and a not-rock-the-boat attitude. You need to rock the boat. You need to get right up in those people's face and say, your behavior is unacceptable.
Right.
Unacceptable. Yeah. And how many are doing that? Just be honest. That's all. I have respect for people who are honest. Just say it how it really is. That's all I'm here to do. I'm not here to lie to people. I'm not here to tell people what they want to hear. If I wanted to tell people what they wanted to hear instead of what's true, mm-hmm. I would go into the whole New Age movement. I'd trim myself up real nice and prim and proper. I'd wear the three-piece suit. I'd speak with soft, pleasant, and pleasing tones and talk to you like you're a child. And I would say, and there's nothing to worry about. It's all going to work itself out. Yeah. And, you know, no real real-world change in action is required, and everything's just working out just as it should, you know? So just feel good. All enlightenment is about feeling good. Certainly don't tell other people things that they don't want to hear. Oh, my goodness, that might start a little conflict there, and we don't want to have that, do we? You know, it's such utter nonsense.
It really is.
The New Age movement is a religion that is keeping the truth back from actually filtering its way into people. And therefore, it is helping to hold in place the paradigm of human enslavement. I can't tell you how insidious this movement is. And how much people need to get their head out from up their rear end when it comes to this community called the New Age movement. And I'm not telling you every single thing that is ever taught or talked about within that community is wrong or bad or negative. It's not what I'm saying. I'm saying there are subtle deceptions operating within this movement. And you need to use discernment about what real, true, streetwise spirituality actually is versus the subtle deceptions that are being taught in this community.
Mm-hmm.
And not rocking the boat and not getting up in other people's face about the truth is one of them. Because what they're teaching you in that attitude is, don't do the great work. They don't want to tell you what the great work is. They don't want you to know what the great work is. The occultists who came up with these deceptions don't want alchemists being created on the earth. They don't want sleeping spiritual warriors awakening to their true mission. They don't want people actually telling people the truth about what's really going on here in our condition on earth. That's the last thing they want. They want people speaking in soft, pleasing tones to keep other people asleep to their true situation. That's what the dark occultists who came up with the deceptions of the New Age community in the modern world want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have to see through this deception and get discerning real fast. So many people are wrapped up in it, it's a shame. It's really a shame how many people are wrapped up in it. And once again, not a doom and gloom statement. I'm just telling people the way it really is. I'm
right.
not here to be liked or popular. I'm here to tell you how it actually is so you can wake up and change how it is. And that's what we are here to do. And we have been derailed from that mission as a whole people. You know, and we got to get back on the track of that mission, folks. We need to get back on the track of that mission and start doing the real great work.
So I guess I can assume then, and you add to it if you need to, one of the things we can do to pull the communities together is to stand up and speak the truth as loudly as possible. And maybe someone on the
yes.
other side will hear. And maybe they
and
will start shouting the
ground.
Truth. Right, right.
That's right. Right, Michael. A common ground is important, okay?
Yeah.
So, you know, people in the freedom movement, okay, go and attend some community events in your area. It shouldn't be too hard to find. Go on meetup.com or something like that. Go on websites, UFO meetups, you know, extraterrestrial discussions, extraterrestrial documentary evening. You can find them. They're out there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Lectures. Go follow people on the lecture circuit when they come to your town, a guy you, or a woman you like on the lecture circuit that talks about these topics. You know, go try to bring people in who are in the freedom community and say, let's go check out what this person has to say. Maybe it's relevant. Maybe it has something to do with what's going on in the political spectrum. And I guarantee you it does. You know?
Yeah.
You need to influence people. You need to step into those realms, befriend people. Friendship will carry a lot of weight. Make friends with these people, even if you don't see eye to eye at first. It's a form of infiltration.
Right.
You know?
Well,
make
I think
friends with those people and then try to get them actively involved. It doesn't
right.
mean your friendship has to be dishonest. You could actually really develop a true friendship with these people.
That's
and
what
then
I was
try to
say.
Slowly
yeah.
bring them over. Yeah.
Friendship
in the other way.
Friendship is not two people being in agreement 100% of the time. You know, friendship is loyalty. Right.
Yep. So befriend people on the other, quote, side. So we're all on the same side. We all ultimately want the same thing. We want to be free. We want to have the truth out there.
Well, that's
and
the thing.
And widely known, commonly known.
There really are no sides.
No. So, I'd love to take people's calls if we have any callers, because I want to start taking more calls from people and clarifying things. I recognize that language, as great of a tool as it is, it's often that you have to say things so many times and clarify them and process them so many times for people to develop a clear, accurate understanding that
mm-hmm.
I think one of the best ways to give people an accurate understanding is to answer their questions to a point where they say, yes, I'm satisfied, that answers my question, and I have a better understanding. And it doesn't mean that you take my word as the be-all and end-all, and that's just how it is. I would never tell anybody to do that either. You need to do your own research, folks. This isn't about believing me or believing anybody, any other researcher for that matter. You need to do your own homework. But what I'm saying here is no matter how much I myself can go on and, you know, even, you know, ramble about a particular topic and really try to do my best into covering all aspects or all bases of it, my language is still not going to fully cover every single person's possible lack of a grasp of a particular topic, and the only way that they are really going to develop further clarity is if they ask questions, and then I could try to clarify it in their understanding. So that's why I'd like to take some questions if we have anybody holding, or any questions that come from the chat room, if you'd like to do that.
Yeah, if there's anybody in the chat room that does have a question, pass it on to Chris. And, you know, if not, that's okay, too. We'll have Mark on again in the future. But, yeah, Mark is right. We're going to go over a few minutes just to see if anybody wants to ask any questions. So, you know, give
yeah,
it your best, folks.
Yeah, I'm trying to grab folks here. We got 20 people in the room, so it's kind of, you know, going back and forth. But yeah, some of the things that have been brought up is, you know, I think you definitely clarified the point earlier about, you know, what you're presenting is, you know, what reality is now, and it is not, you know, this, you know, idealistic, you know, everything will be fine. It's a message that you have to take action for things to improve, and you know, I definitely
right.
you know picked up on that, but at the same time. I think the bigger question overall, the original sentiment was, how effective do you really think that we could be right now? And I think you've already answered that, in my opinion, is because, you know, the people who are speaking up, it's small groups and it's not the
yes.
mass majority. And that
That's
is,
right.
to me, the biggest obstacle.
Right.
Not,
there it is.
it's not an insurmountable impossibility. It's not that it's all of, you know, all of them versus a few of us, but in reality we are right now. But, you know, what I've learned over the years is, you know, people, you know, I hate to say it, but sometimes you can't beat them over the head with the stick. Sometimes you have to dangle the carrot. You have to get them to buy into it a little bit at a time. You know, and
sure.
This is what we can do with people in regards to the different freedom movements. And, you know,
sure.
Right now, that's
definitely.
It's, you know, like you said, on that common ground. But the thing,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying try to give people the very end of the picture, the full picture,
right.
All in one sitting. How long would it take me to unfurl my podcast tapestry?
Oh, my God, yeah. Long
years,
time.
Years.
Yeah.
Years of information, you know. I tell people, go back, listen from podcast number one, whatonearthishappening.com/podcast.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Go to that page. Go back to number one. Don't start at the current ones. You're going to be getting the top floor before you build the foundation. Can't do it that way.
Yeah,
right. That involves prerequisite knowledge. You've got to start at the foundation and work your way up. You know, you don't build the top floor of a building before you build the foundation. You know,
yeah,
not if you want a good structure to stand. So,
I see.
You know, when it comes to this prerequisite knowledge, you've got to give people it in small doses. You know, and let them integrate it. Give them time to integrate it. That
right.
doesn't mean baby spoon feed them either.
Yeah.
Okay?
Right.
And think, oh, they just can't handle it. You have to speak it right out there. But you got to give them it in smaller quantities at first. And then when they – it's like you wouldn't feed a child a huge meal that a full-grown adult would eat, you know, a baby. You would feed them ground-up food that is very processed so that, you know, they're taking in food that doesn't need to be chewed as much. You know,
right.
You can kill a baby if you give them food that really needs to be chewed. You wouldn't do that, you know. So they have to start first before they can build up the strength and ability to take it in and chew it for themselves, so to speak. So that's important. And, you know, it's a very valid point.
What I was going to say is that, you know, people get upset because they don't understand that you are a call to action. You're not a person that's bringing bad news. You are a call to action. And a call to action is not someone that stands on the corner and mumbles. They have a bullhorn and
right.
they shout the information. And if people don't want to hear
right.
it, they cover their ears and walk away. But people do want to hear
right.
it, you know?
The truth is out there, as they say. It's not covered up anymore. I tell people we are living in post-apocalyptic times.
Mm-hmm.
Because apocalypse literally means revealing. What is the book of Apocalypse also known as biblically? It's known as Revelation.
Revelation,
revealing
right.
That
right.
which Revelation means that which has been revealed. Apocalypse comes from the Greek language. Apo in Greek means off of or away from. And then kaliptein is a verb in the Greek language, in ancient Greek, which means to conceal or to hide or to veil from sight, similar to the verb occultare in Latin, which means to occult or to hide. Kaliptein, okay, it means to hide or to conceal or to veil. So when we put that together with apo, apocalyptine, where apocalypse comes from, it means to remove that which has been veiled from sight, to take the veil off of it, to take the cover off of, or to reveal, so you can see it for what it is. It doesn't mean that what you're going to find is wonderful, majestic, and beautiful. The truth is ugly where we are at as a species.
Good point.
But once again, it has to be accepted for what it is. Truth must be accepted. Accept existence or expect resistance. You know, and to address another point that Chris brought up when he was saying, you know, people are uncomfortable in hearing that it's not just going to be a small group of people that make this change happen. The reason it's not happening as a whole for our whole species is because not enough people are doing that work to speak the truth. It's why is it called a quantum shift? See, language reveals so much, folks. There's a reason we call it a quantum shift in consciousness. The word quantum comes from Latin. It means an amount of something. So a quantum shift means a shift in consciousness that is driven by an amount of people who are changing consciousness. It doesn't happen by a tiny, tiny, tiny little fraction of people. We're not in a quantum shift yet. We need way, way more people first changing themselves, then influencing others to change and step into their own power. Then a quantum shift will happen. And like I said, I will tell you that a true quantum shift in human consciousness is occurring when people in the control system recognize it as a system of slavery to such an extent that they quit their jobs regardless if they become paupers in the street, to the extent where the mainstream media must acknowledge we can no longer fill these positions of these institutions any longer. That's when I will step forward and say, ladies and gentlemen, humanity is in the midst of a full-blown paradigm shift in positive consciousness toward truth and freedom. When that happens, I will be the first proclaiming it. But I will not blow smoke up people's ass and tell them that's happening when it is not. I will not do that.
And that makes sense to me. Well, I don't think we have any questions or callers. So I think we really
clarified myself to such an extent this evening that there's nothing else to clarify.
they don't need
amazing.
Any more information.
Well, that's why
yeah,
I'm having
chew on that for a little while, folks.
Exactly.
See what you make out of that.
Exactly. Well, that's why I want to have you on again in the future at some point, because I think we need to continue this dialogue. I think my particular audience needs to hear it, and that's
sure.
the only way they're going to get control of their situation. So, anyway, thanks a lot, Mark, for coming
Absolutely.
On.
I wish everyone out there the best, and I do not see this as hopeless, ladies and gentlemen. Please do not take that away from what I have said. A lot more is required on humanity's part to willfully change our current condition. Can it be done? Absolutely. Will it be done? Time will tell.
That's up to us.
I want to thank you. Absolutely. Who is going to determine that is
we are.
The being that you see each day when you step forward and look into that mirror.
That's
correct. The device that, of what's going to tell you the truth about whether that's going to be done or not.
Correct.
So
correct.
We need to step into our power and just start doing it. That's all there is to it. And I want to thank all of you guys for providing this opportunity for me, because like I said, this audience is special. It is unique. I don't get to speak to an audience like this all the time. So when I do have the opportunity, I'm really thankful and appreciative for it. So thank you guys for what you do.
You're welcome, and thank you for coming on and opening up some eyes.
Thanks, Mark. Yeah.
You got it.
Have a good
Take
night.
Good
I'll
care.
Be in touch, Mark. Okay. Bye-bye now.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay, everybody. Have a good night, and I have a lot of people out there, I'm sure, that have to digest the show tonight. I think they're going to find
sure.
it quite useful.
It's a tense show.
It's good. It's excellent. All right, man.
Don't forget to mention who's coming up next week.
Yes. Next week we're going to have our good friend Peter Robbins come back and tell
Yay.
Us.
Oh, great guy.
Yeah. Going to give us an update.
I'll be listening.
Good, good. Because he's going to update us on Rendlesham and, keep us up to date on the happenings there. And, of course, we're just going to have a really good conversation with him. He's just a gentleman.
There's one of my favorite people in the whole UFO community.
Oh,
just,
absolutely.
Great energy,
he's the
great
nicest
personality.
Guy, yeah. He is
the gentleman of ufology. As Richard Dolan is
yes,
the scholar,
is.
Richard Dolan is the scholar, he is the gentleman. And, that's
Absolutely.
How I see it. Okay, gang.
Absolutely.
Have a good
okay.
night.
Okay. Take
Keep
care.
Thank you, everyone.
All right. Good night.
Good night. Bye-bye.